And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, live from New York City, New York, where we are joined by ESPN insider extraordinaire, news-breaking ace, Adrian Wojnarowski. How you doing, sir?
Zach, I'm great. Is that a – I thought that was an Astros hat, but it's not an Astros hat.
Everyone thinks it's an Astros hat. It's a WNBA hat. There's a little W in there.
Yeah, there is a W.
Really bad logo by the WNBA, because everywhere I go, everyone's like, are you an Astros fan? I'm like, nope, WNBA hat.
Yeah, Tim Kurchin told me – I saw him in Bristol a couple weeks ago. I'm a big Red Sox fan, as you probably don't know. And I said, Tim, how can we beat Houston? He said, no, you're going to lose. And I agreed with him. I thought we weren't going to beat, and I'm excited. I texted a friend last night, a childhood friend of mine, grew up. We're both Red Sox fans. And I said, I feel like I know what it's like to be – I feel like I know what it's like to be a Yankee fan now. Just win World Series. You're just getting used to it. Like, it's anyway. That's my baseball contribution to the pod.
I miss baseball a lot. My baseball. One of the last pieces I wrote for Grantland was about my baseball.
Oh, the Mets
fandom and how much I loved the Mets growing up and how I sort of accidentally became converted to a polygamous fan with the Red Sox because my father is a Red Sox fan, you know, and in 2004 he was, I don't know, 60 years old or whatever and had never seen the Red Sox win. And I just wanted – how can you not want that? Mm-hmm. So now I just kind of lost baseball. And I miss – baseball was neck and neck with basketball for me as my yep. favorite sport. Mm-hmm. And I just love the tension of it even though the games take forever. And it was so funny. I found, all these games take so long. Like, I don't know why they bother programming them. It's like baseball 8 to 11 and then no local news. Like this right. is just don't even block that out. So all I'm done watching NBA games. I flip over to these baseball games. Usually it's the last bit of game. And I found myself what was it, game 4? They came back from 4-0. Mm-hmm. It was 4-4 by the time I flipped it on. Pierce hits the bases. Pierce, who I've literally never heard of until yeah. 4 days ago, yep. hits the bases clearing double. And I stand up on the couch, or I stand up in front of my couch and go, get down, like telling the ball to get down. I'm like, wow, somewhere in me, the baseball fandom still lives. Like, I still know what to say. I still know the lingo. I miss it. I miss baseball.
Yeah, I know. I think we have talked about this. I grew up in Bristol, Connecticut, yeah. home of ESPN, but also home. When I was a kid, of the AA Bristol Red Sox. So the Red Sox AA team, which went to New Britain, and I don't even know where they are now. Maybe, I don't know. But when I was a kid, all those guys came through Bristol. And so I used to see Wade Boggs and Oil Can Boyd. So, like, you developed an affinity for guys that they were coming through. So it was, like, easy to be a Sox fan there.
Yeah, so I just wanted to see them win for my dad so much. But I never cared about a team as deeply as I cared about the New York Mets, and particularly from like 94 to 2002. I was just like, I was an insane person. I broke up with a girl over the Mets. I stormed out of another girl's family's house during game one of the 2000 World Series when the Yankees rallied to tie the game. I was like an insane person. I have a Todd Hundley jersey. It's the only official jersey I have of any team ever. What is a Todd Hundley jersey?
Did you storm out because their dad or brother said something about
it? Oh, they're all taunting. It's all Yankee fans. They're all taunting me. I was just immature. I knew Armando Benitez was going to blow game one. Like, I knew it. I just knew it. I would not have trusted Armando Benitez to, like, save anything, save my money, save a ticket stub. I just wouldn't have trusted him. Anyway, and now the Mets live, like half the Mets live in my neighborhood in Long Island City, Queens, because that's if you play yeah. for the Mets and you don't want to go over a bridge to live your life, that's where you would live. And so like there are Mets living in these high rise buildings around me. I don't even recognize them. Terry Collins used to shop at my grocery store.
Can I add one more Mets Red Sox fact?
Yeah.
So, 86, the Red Sox are blowing game 6, right? I remember sitting in my living room with my dad. We were watching. And so, Rich Gedman, ball gets by him. Mookie scores. Rich Gedman, wild pitch. Bob Stanley pass ball. When I was a kid, the Red Sox used to have these clinics. And I was a catcher in Little League in high school, whatever. And our Little League field was right behind the little stadium where the Red Sox played, and they would do these clinics for Little League. So you'd go down, and I went. Rich Gedman had just been signed out of like Worcester American Legion. He was like 19 years old, and they sent him. I think they sent him right up to Double A. And so I was the only catcher there that day, and Rich Gedman and I worked together. And so I remember almost everything. I must have been maybe 10, 9 or 10. And I remember everything I ever learned about being a catcher, all the little, you know, how to stagger your feet and when to put the hand behind your back on a pitch and how to signal. I learned it all from Rich Gedman that day. And so two things. One, I never could – like I know a lot of Red Sox fans were mad at Gedman. I always – he was always my guy. I loved him. And I always kept him as my not anymore, I guess I could say, my password on like – your password on everything.
Yeah.
It always was some variation of Gedman. It isn't anymore. But for years, and it kind of works on the keyboard kind of quickly. Anyway, that's
– Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I miss baseball a lot. It's a beautiful game. I still need to even go see Citi Field. I haven't even been to Citi Field. But yeah, I never cared about a team like I cared about the Mets. And so I'm happy my dad got to see the Red Sox win again. Last night I called him during the game. I didn't call him after the game because, you know, it's late. He's probably crying. I didn't want to interrupt his post game celebration. But yeah.
And last thing, we got our daughter's in college in Boston. And so my wife got a text late last night. She ran with the masses. She wouldn't even have known the Red Sox were in the playoffs last week. Never mind the World Series. But all of a sudden it seemed to become a party atmosphere and she ended up, over at Fenway and we got like a 10-second video clip of some guys up in a tree and people yelling, and they have classes canceled this week because I guess the parade comes right through campus.
Yeah.
So she's a baseball fan because I guess there would seem to be a party, and then two, no classes one of the days.
So, yeah, there so you go. That'll get it done. Okay, let's talk about basketball. I would like to talk about baseball more, but we can't. It's not our job. My quiet Sunday at one of my daughter's friends had a birthday party on the Upper East Side, and my Sunday was I'm going to go to the birthday party. Accompany her, eat some pizza, and take the subway down to Barclays Center for just a wonderful 5 p.m. Warriors Nets tip. And then, bam, Ty Lue gets fired. And so I spend half the birthday party like a jerk, texting and calling and like ignoring my family responsibilities. So you and Wendy are all up in this all day yesterday. So here's what's interesting to me. There are these two, and Wendy has reported this, there are these two competing lines of thought. They're not competing. I shouldn't say competing. One is, the front office wanted Ty to play the young guys more. And then the other is either the front office or ownership or both thought the team should be more competitive than 0-6 this year. Those two things are not necessarily in conflict because it's not as if the veterans are like playing well and winning games. They've won zero games, but they're a little bit in conflict. I don't think like playing Colin Sexton and David Nwaba and whoever else more is like a method of like getting the seventh seed in the East this season. So parse that for me. Like, are both of those things equally important? Is what's more important? Where are those things coming from?
I mean, I think from the perspective of Ty Lue and maybe the coaching staff, I think they may have felt like, the talk all summer was, I mean, they re-signed Kevin Love, to his extension and they did the rookie extension with Larry Nance and their mindset from the day LeBron left was we're not looking to – we want to try to be back in the playoffs. We don't – we're not trying to tank. But we certainly need to get younger and we need to I think Cleveland feels like they've been in such win-now mode for so long with LeBron. You know, there's never a lot of time for player development. You're not always practicing. And that had to become a greater priority for them. Those things were true. And then I think – maybe the sense with the coaches was when they got into the season, they felt it became more focused on, play these younger guys and let's get them out there. If we're going to get our teeth kicked in, let's do it with the younger guys.
Well, that's a good idea.
Right, right. And 0-6, listen, if they're 2-4, if they're 1-5, does it happen? I mean, Saturday, I checked in on that situation on Saturday, and it did not feel like Ty was getting fired on Saturday, or it did not feel imminent on Saturday. And I think something happened overnight or into Sunday morning that I think the decision was made Sunday, not Saturday. And so they went down that road. I mean, I think for Ty Lue, I think this is going to be a lot like the Fizz for his career. It's going to feel somewhat like the Fizdale situation. Now, Ty has won a championship and won the three straight finals. I'm not comparing his resume with what Fizz did. But when you get fired early in the season, like Fizz was – when you looked out in Memphis at what was coming, there was just going to be an avalanche of losses attached to you and there was nothing you could do about it. And he got out of there before all those losses got attached to him. I think he still had a winning record, right? Still had a winning record at the when he left?
Maybe.
Yep.
It's got to be close.
Yeah. And so if he had waited another week, he wouldn't have. And with Ty, now his record's outstanding because they did a lot of winning. But he doesn't have – he's – listen, 0-6, I think, to me, no matter who's coaching that team, was going to turn into 2-11 and then, you know – 3-15, whatever it's going to be. It's not going to be.
Fizdale's career record is 51-56. Just under 500.
That was in Memphis.
Oh, in Memphis.
I was just talking in Memphis.
You know what? He was one game under 500. He was 50-51. So yeah. He got out two games late. He should have got out two games earlier.
In that sense, listen, I think my sense is in Cleveland, like, there was a lot of money left on the deal, and there's still a lot of money left on that deal. You know, he was rewarded for that championship, and rightly so. But, you know, they were in a different place, and I think – I don't want to say he and Kobe Altman didn't get along. I think they got along fine. But I think the next coach – and I'm not – listen, maybe Larry Drew, if he decides to do this interim for the rest of the year – listen, maybe he stays on. It's possible. But I think what you'll probably see Cleveland do, I think almost certainly, will be, you know, you're going to see them looking for their – who's their Kenny Atkinson or who's their Lloyd Pierce, who the guy, the young developmental coach on the way up. That'll become their priority.
Rick Pitino. Maybe Rick Pitino.
Maybe Rick Pitino.
Imagine that. This is – to your point, Ty Lue won the lottery. This is winning the lottery. You get fired. All you're going to do is lose. Your team stinks. You're going to have these veterans who are unhappy because they're not playing. I mean, JR's Instagram account – I'm not even on Instagram. JR Smith's Instagram account is just like a running diary of miserable veteran malcontent. Korver, of course, will be a great teammate no matter what,
right.
But wants to play. And you're just going to lose all the time in Cleveland. And you get, I think you reported $15 million?
Yeah.
$15 million of money that just arrives in your checking account every couple of weeks. Just, here's thousands of dollars for you did nothing this week. Here's thousands more for 3 years. Just this money just keeps pouring in. Yeah. And now he gets to then, now if he gets hired again, they'll be offset and all that.
Yeah.
But now he gets, as you said, he can go visit with people. He can do he can come on the jump. I bet we will see him on the jump at some point this year. And then he can eventually get a new job because he will get another job. If you win a championship, I don't care if people just think LeBron is the coach, the system, the GM, and everything. If you win a championship and you go to the finals all those years, and he's a beloved ex-player around the league, like, he's going to get another head coaching job. You don't do all of that and not get now, if you fail at jobs 2 and 3, maybe you don't get 4, but he's going to get job 2.
No, there's no question. And you mentioned the jump, and certainly we're just – you know, we're sort of projecting that idea, you know, like –
yes,
that,
I'm not, you know. So I'm not sourcing
right.
that
no,
to
no, no,
internal
but,
ESPN
but,
sources.
No, but – How many episodes of The Jump with Ty Lue are coming where it's going to be Ty either commiserating with Luke Walton or trying to explain what Luke Walton's going through or trying to, well, here's what LeBron – how many Luke Walton – Ty will be – it's the perfect – it's the – like there's never been a more – that's perfect.
I find myself
what a
almost,
perfect role.
Almost rooting for the Lakers just to not have that as a storyline. Not because I like Luke, although I do, just because it's like there's enough drama. Like just today, we have a coach fired. We have the Wizards losing by 1,000 points every game. We have Kawhi and Giannis being held out. There's just enough news all the time. Like I don't need I don't need LeBron LA to produce constant melodrama.
Mm-hmm.
So Colin Sexton this year has played 17, 23, 27, 25, 25, 22 minutes. That's enough minutes.
For a rookie, it's not unreasonable.
I'm not throwing a fit. What do they want, 40 minutes? This is what happens when you have LeBron James and you build a championship team around him or a championship contending team around him full of veterans, and then he leaves. You have all these veterans who have to play. George Hill has to get minutes and Rodney Hood has to get minutes and all of this. I don't think there was a top-down mandate that all the X player has to play X minutes and X player has to be X minutes. I think it's more about they watched the team play and thought, oh boy, we had LeBron. Like that was kind of our offense was like LeBron, like whatever LeBron wants to do. So we didn't have a system. We had LeBron, which is why every time LeBron rested, they just didn't know what to do because they had no other offense. And I think there was some expectation. We got to think of something. We got to think of a new way to play. We got to think of a style. We got to think of identity. And aside from we're going to push the pace, which they did, you know, like Kevin Love would bring the ball up after a rebound. They would push the pace. There was just no identity to the team. They're like 25th in assist rate or 27th or something like that. They can't generate threes and all this. And I just think, but look, I'm any of us who make a lot of predictions are going to be wrong a lot. One that I'm going to be right on is when I did my tiers, my little power rankings, I had Cleveland in the dog poop tier with Sacramento and New York and Atlanta and all these teams that are trying to lose. And I got pushback from the Cavs and I got pushback from a lot of Cavs fans. I looked at the – every year when I get back from vacation, I spend 2 days or 3 days doing a roster reset of every team. I literally write down in handwriting wings, points, bigs, salary cap, outgoings. It helps me sort of reconnect with the league. And every year there's one or two teams where doing that dramatically changes my perception of the team. And when I did that for the Cavs, I just looked at that piece of paper. I was like, oh, my God, this team is terrible. They're just not good. If Dan Gilbert expected them to chase the eighth seed, it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I think it's hard. Like, think of it this way. You had two number one overall picks in the last – what year was Anthony Bennett?
13 maybe?
13, and Kyrie was
11, I think.
11, so, okay. In the last 7 years, you had two number one overall picks. And what do you have left to show for two number one overall picks? Colin Sexton's pick.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you flipped, I wouldn't even say that, like, you flipped Isaiah into that. Really, Isaiah wasn't why that trade happened. Really, like, you just don't have – so that's hard to withstand in your infrastructure of – even if those players weren't with you, you'd expect somehow they were traded or they would have commanded some big return back and you have a lot to show for them. That's really hard to recover from, like when you just don't have much to show, if anything, to show for it, and your infrastructure is going to be, you know, limited, and their infrastructure of young players and players they've developed over the last 6-7 years is, it's really limited.
Yeah, and you know, look, I wrote this the minute they lost the finals. My column was that went up on the site was they're screwed. The Cavs are screwed. They built the team around LeBron, and LeBron's going to leave, and if he leaves, they're screwed. And Bennett was in that story as sort of one of these things that ripples across time that people have forgotten about because it was before LeBron. And some people correctly pointed out that if Bennett had been good, they may not have, gotten Wiggins number one. They may not have been so bad as to get Wiggins, but they got Wiggins from the ninth spot in the draft. So you're just playing these what if games. Mm-hmm. It's like, but it's painful to, and, I mean, they went – it's really, really hard to go all in to win a championship and keep the future stocked at the same time. This is why championship teams die out and teams rebuild, and it's why the Spurs are such an incredible exception because every 10 years, like clockwork, they get a Tony Parker in the 20s, they trade for Kawhi Leonard, and they just keep it going, and we'll see if they can do that. Yeah. And this is why, like Houston – trading four first-round picks or offering, as you reported first last week, offering four first-round picks. Like, I don't care how you protect those picks in the end. That is enormously risky. Now, if you traded an unprotected 2023 or 2025, which they won't do, that's enormously – it's just hard to do. And now the Cavs are in this position where I just don't know why they expected to be competitive.
Let me ask you this question, Zach. Do you think every owner – let's say you gave them the choice – we're going to give up four picks. We're going to really mortgage our future. But we're going to get a title the next 2 years. But, man, we're going to be bad for a long time. Like, we're going to be bad. Our building may be empty. As a business model, I don't know how profitable we're going to be. Or we can just keep going along. We can stay. I think we'll be in the 50 to 55 range. We can reshape it. How many guys would actually take the title and then be not only just bad for a bunch of years, but that, like – I don't think it's as many as you'd think.
Really?
I don't.
Well, I mean, that's been one of the subjects of debate. And to me, the flash, the team that encapsulated that was the Joe Johnson Hawks, because all of us, not all of us, but a lot of people in the media sort of derided them as like, oh, cute second round team. Every year they win 49 to 51 games or whatever, and they get out in the second round. Like, who would want to be that team? But that's better than mediocre. That's not the treadmill of mediocrity. That's like, now Atlanta is a tough market for the NBA. And
it's hard to rebuild in Atlanta. Like, fans, it's hard when you have a good team in Atlanta. And even when they were really good, and like you mentioned, those really good teams, you'd go there when the late, like, and I know it's always like this, but like, if it was like LA, now LA would do this in every building with Kobe, but the Knicks, but you would go in and they'd be embarrassed nights where like some visiting fan base would overrun their place when their team was really good. And like the Kobe Lakers could do that almost in every building in the league. But I do think you have to measure market and where you are and know, like, we just, if we're really bad for two or three or four years in Atlanta, like, can we ever get people back in the building? It's just hard where you're always fighting.
Well, this is why when Philly processed, amid all the pearl clutching about what Philadelphia was doing, which was just a more extreme version of what many other teams had done before, one of the things that came up was, well, Philadelphia is actually a pretty big market team. And the big market teams are better positioned to tank than the crappy market teams or the small market team. By crappy, I mean they just don't draw, their TV deals bad. They don't make, like the Knicks, they'd make money if no one went to a game. And that's an exaggeration, but like the Knicks are, you know, we can't rebuild in New York, not for financial reasons. The Knicks will be fine. Doesn't matter how bad the Knicks are. It matters how bad Memphis is. You know,
you compared. We were talking about baseball, and maybe it's a function of the media and how the media covers baseball in New York versus basketball. Baseball's always been like the same group of really respect. Like, basketball writers have kind of come and gone. Guys have cycled in and out of beats, and some columnists have come and gone. And baseball's had this throng. Like, baseball fans in New York, they read about the Mets and the Yankees, and man, they hold those teams accountable. Like, the Mets just get hammered for not spending or drafting poorly or hiring poorly. And, you know, the Knicks, it's always felt like to me, and I'm not saying there's plenty in the media who've done it, but it's never cost them. You said it's never cost them greatly at the gate. That Jim Dolan and how he had run that team for so long, like, you would think in this market, you'd say, man, they're going to hold you accountable. You just can't get away with this. Like, as a business, it won't. And they did, and they have. And I don't know if it's the sports or but I always thought Knicks fans are so accepting of every next – and I'm not talking about this group who's come in and Scott Perry. I'm not talking about that. But whatever the next thing Jim Dolan tried to sell him, even if it didn't make any sense, like, what does Phil Jackson know about being a GM? Why do you think Phil Jackson is going to be a great GM just because he was a great coach? And at this point, his life, everything he was met with – okay, this is the savior. We have a new savior. This is it. And I don't know. I always felt like, for as tough as New York's supposed to be, and I live here and I've seen it, I always thought Dolan got more of a pass on all this. People are always accepting of the next thing coming down the road that, well, this is the one that will do it.
And the smart fans are like, play Knox, play Ntilikina, be bad. You know, even if we don't get Durant, let's do this properly. And don't sign Amari Stoudemire 2.0, and don't trade a lottery pick for Andrea Bargnani. Just don't do that. Listeners, you know that I love anything that can save me time. And a few years ago, it felt like buying tickets to sporting events was something that was taking too much of my time. There are a million websites on the secondary market, and I was paranoid about checking all of them. Am I missing a good deal over here? How do I know I'm getting a good deal? What if I didn't check that website? Oh my God, 2 hours have gone by. SeatGeek solves all those problems for you. It collates all of those secondary marketplaces into one place. It puts millions of tickets onto its app so you can easily find the seats you want for the price you're willing to pay. All the searching is done for you. It's all in one spot. It has an easy color-coded system, green dots for good deals, red dots for not so good deals, helps you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Every purchase is fully guaranteed. That's important. You can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to ticket source for everything from sporting events, concerts, comedy shows, theater. They helped me get tickets to Hamilton last year, which was not easy. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. That can be a significant portion of an NBA ticket, for instance. All you got to do, download the SeatGeek app. Enter promo code LOW, L-O-W-E, my last name, the name of this podcast. That's promo code LOW, and bam, $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. So let's go back to the Cavs. A lot of people have asked me in the last 24 hours, like, well, is Ty Lue a good coach? I mean, and the truthful answer is, I don't know. Because, look, he won a championship. He got those guys to play hard, and they loved him. And whatever was clouding their locker room when Blatt was there was unclouded when they promoted Ty, which was a ballsy move by Griff.
You know, I think sometimes we confuse good coach with the right coach. Ty Lue was the right coach for that team at that time, and that's what's most important. And like, you can't win a championship and not be a good coach. You can't – even though, like – even in the year before, even when they were down Kyrie, when they got to the year before when they got the Warriors to six games with all the injuries, Kyrie was out, Love was out, right?
Yeah, it was Blatt still.
Blatt was still the head coach. But defensively, Ty got a lot of credit for how they were defending, how they defended the Warriors in that series.
Well, and that was when they famously were like, we're going to play Smet. We're going to run the ball. We're just going to post LeBron for 20 seconds and milk the clock and try to get offensive rebounds because that's the only chance we have now that Kyrie and Kevin are out. And they were up 2-1. And like the Warriors for a second were like, this is weird. Like, we got to figure out how to deal with this.
Mm-hmm. But I think so much in this league is it's the right coach at the right time. And like, listen, if Steve Kerr takes the Knicks job, like which he almost did, is he just Jeff Hornacek now? Do we just look at Steve Kerr like Jeff Hornacek? And if Stan Van Gundy had gone to Golden State, like Steve Kerr, you know, if they had just gave Steve Kerr what he wanted financially, if they didn't have like about a week where they're fighting over numbers, I think Steve Kerr probably – he could speak to it better. But my sense in those negotiations where Kerr was – That delay in time gave Golden State a chance to get back in when the meeting didn't go well for either side with Stan. And Stan didn't feel like – Stan wanted the Detroit thing and didn't want to just be coach. I have all the respect in the world for what Steve Kerr's done in Golden State. But would he have gotten out of New York alive? I don't think – he wouldn't have.
I people want a definitive answer because – This is the great and the bad about having LeBron on your team is that you get to the finals and you win. And also no one gives you any credit for anything because they assume LeBron controls everything. And he did control all the offense. And to me, the failure last year, one of the things that will always stick in my mind last year was the contrast between the Rockets and the Cavs when they faced the Warriors. The Rockets prepared for more than a year. With Bezdelic and the right kind of players and drills every day and film sessions every day. This is how we play defense all year long. This is how we play defense with an eye on the Warriors. We're going to master this, and I'm going to harp on you every single day when you screw up. We're going to have film sessions. We're going to practice. The Cavs didn't give a shit about defense for an entire year. Just like, we don't care. We play in the East. We have LeBron. We're not even going to pretend that we care. We're not even going to pretend that – or at least the on-court product suggested – because I know they have Longo. Who cares? Longo loses sleep – Mike Longobardi loses sleep over bad defense. On the court, the product was they're not talking to each other. They don't have a coherent system. I don't know. Then they get to the Warriors in the finals, and they try to craft a game plan. And the game plan was we're going to switch everything except Love pick and rolls. And shockingly, they failed because they were students cramming at the last minute, and they failed. Because that's really hard to execute. Any defense against the Warriors is really hard to execute. This one had multiple different plans and contingencies, and they couldn't do it. It was a smart idea. I wrote it before the finals. That was the correct game plan. That was the best shot they had. And really, they probably had no shot, but that was the best shot they had. And the players couldn't execute it because they just – you can't cram 48 hours before the Warriors and say, this is now how we play. And I just don't know – how to parcel out blame for that. They had no culture or identity of this is how we play defense and we take pride in it and this is how we do it. And is that Ty's fault? Is that LeBron's fault? Is that playing in the East's fault? Is that it was so easy for them to get? I don't know. So I would really be interested to see Ty's next job. And I thought this was going to be Ty's next job, and now six games in, it is not.
Yeah, and I think Eric Spoelstra, when he was winning in Miami, right? Like when they were 9-9 or 9-8, right? It was Spo's fault, right? Spo can't coach this team. What in fact, what you saw was Spo was laying the groundwork to create an environment and an accountability and a discipline that propelled that group, to help propel them to two titles. And I think LeBron did things in Miami and evolved as a player. He gets credit for evolving as a player. The player gets the credit. But I do think that defensively, I think the first day of practice, I remember hearing a story about like the first day of training camp, you know, they went at LeBron pretty good defensively, making some mistakes, and said, like, this is how it's going to be. And when and I think we talked about this in the other and most recent podcast in Ian Thompson's book, which when those guys, when players went to Pat Riley and were sort of saying, hey, have you still thinking about coaching, coach? You know, and no, like Spo's the coach and go back downstairs. And that's how you look at what Spo has done since they've left. And there's not a coach in the league. We talked about there's not a coach in the league who gets, you make a case, he's one of them, who gets the most out of whoever he has. Guys get better, guys, and he molds a system and a way to play to maximize whatever strengths there are, and they're just a tough out every night. And I think Eric Spoelstra, post-LeBron James, I think the people in it felt this guy's a great coach who were seeing it. Some people needed to see him do some things outside of it. And you're right, that will be Ty Luke. And Spo has a program and an environment. Like he's like – you know, there's a program with Eric Spoelstra, and you could, and it certainly it started with Pat, and it's the Miami program, but it's uniquely tailored to who Spoelstra is because he's not Pat Riley. He's his own person. And so I think for Ty Lue or somebody who moves on after winning a championship, like you got to show that you can implement that and you can win, and then you'll get some respect that maybe it's hard to do when you had LeBron. Pat Riley may have done something. When you think of Showtime Lakers, you know, when Pat got to New York and changed his style of play, I wasn't covering the league then. I was young. We were young. I don't know that Pat got the talent was overwhelming with the Lakers. But Pat remade himself in New York, played a whole different style of play, tough, physical, matched up the team he had. And I think even though he didn't win a championship with the Knicks, I think Pat actually elevated himself after winning multiple titles with Showtime.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. He elevated his profile, elevated the sort of respect that he had. You and Wendy reported this morning that Kevin Love is out for possibly a month, or they fear he could miss a month. Kevin Love makes here after the 4-year, $120 million extension. Here are his salaries for the next five seasons: 24.1 now, 28.9 next year. 31.3, 31.3, and then declining to 28.9 way out in 2022, 2023, where I assume the world will have ended by then. will have melted, so this is irrelevant.
Cleveland, by then, Cleveland will be a free agent destination because it'll be beach. You'll be on the beach,
yeah,
right?
I mean, Larry Nance's deal also declines.
It declines too, and that's they did that to obviously create some, you know, a little more flexibility down the line.
If you went into the season thinking the Cavs were going to be bad, which I did, you have to then, as soon as you feel comfortable, you have to begin trying to get something for Kevin Love, because there's no point. Like, just bottom out. Mm-hmm. You owe this top 10 protected pick to Atlanta. Keep the pick. Maximize your chances of getting. Yeah, I know the new lottery odds are what they are, and there's no value in being super duper atrocious instead of just regular atrocious. Yeah. So I get it. But look, I hate to be the turd in the punch bowl. Like, they signed Kevin Love to this extension to trade him.
You hate to be the what?
The turd in the punch bowl. They signed Kevin Love to trade him. I mean, they signed Kevin Love because they like him. He's a very good basketball player, but they'd signed him to an extension to increase his trade value over what would have been an expiring contract. I would expect that those discussions, they will begin searching out a market for him at some point. But what are you hearing on – is it too early to have that discussion? Is he tradable? Is he movable at this number that I just quoted?
Well, it's been the – we've been doing this for years. What's Kevin Love's trade value?
It's unbelievable.
Right? Because it's evolved. It went from being, you know, in Minnesota, like Golden State deciding, do we want to move Clay? Like, that was, as you know, that was a real drag out. Guys taking sides, you know, do we do Klay Thompson for Kevin Love? It was, there were people who wanted to do it, and as much
it
as
may, it may be more than anything else, the pivot point of the Warriors dynasty.
And I think in the end, it got back to, they had just hired Steve Kerr, and Bob Meyer said, we hired Steve. He hasn't coached a game yet, and he really wants to coach Steph Curry and Klay Thompson together. I'm not going to upset this. And that was a factor in it, right? So going from there to, you know, and then in Cleveland at different points, you know, they got kind of close with him in some of the Paul George when they were down the road on some Paul George stuff, the draft the year before. And so, yeah, you go back, what is now, and it's a great point, Zach, the fact that he's under contract at that number, 100, so 4 years, $120 million, and it descends as it goes, does that make him more, you know, he would be, now you'd be, let's say he doesn't do that extension, you would be trading him on an expiring contract, and if you were trading for Kevin Love, you'd probably be a team who'd say, well, if we're doing this and we're giving anything up, we want to re-sign him. I think it is too soon, the idea that they would trade him now, but is it probably inevitable? Yeah, because if you're headed toward a rebuild, he doesn't fit in there, but could Kevin Love bring you back, you know, young players and picks? Maybe one, you get one good young player, or some okay players and contracts and a decent pick. I don't know that you're getting both for him anymore.
I will tell you what.
It's hard to get both for anybody anymore.
Right. Never mind. Well, I mean, I think I predicted in my 37 random wild crazy predictions column that they trade Kevin Love, or at least try to. And I talk to dozens of people around the league. When I see people at games, I talk to them about many topics, including this. And I will say, I'm almost surprised at how strongly the consensus is that he's borderline untradeable at that number. I hear that from everyone I talk to, like just untradeable. And I keep coming back to them saying, A, Kevin Love is good. Like, he's good. You can make fun of his defense. And by the way, he held up in the finals against the Warriors defensively better than he's ever gotten credit for. And it, not just on the famous Steph Curry shot at the end of the championship year. He's a really good player. And like, you just, and we'll talk about this in a second, you just can't underestimate what a desperate and wounded team will do. What Washington or like Charlotte falls three games out of the eighth seed and they're just all in, or I'm just making it up. But I will tell you, like, people, I had someone at the Nets game the other day float like, well, wouldn't Utah trade for Kevin Love if they, no, Utah is not going to take that money onto their books. That is a no, unless like lots of stuff goes wrong. Portland, I don't think Portland is that's been a popular one because he's from, Lake Oswego, I think.
Phoenix in the past, they had tried.
Well, that's the thing. You can't rule out a Phoenix, but no. I just don't see it.
Like, I think two things, Zach. One, he becomes, and you say, a desperate team. And I think, so like, let's say we're in July and some teams with space have some big, big dreams of free agency. And they get shut out. Player stays where he is or he goes to somewhere else. And now we're going, okay, well, try to get Chris Middleton. We can't get him. He's staying in Milwaukee or he's going, whatever. And you go, okay, we got these big, big scholarship to give here. We have it. You know, do we take him into space? Like, then it's that moment where some owner goes, he's a name. He is a four-time, and I saw he's four-time All-Star, five-time All-Star. And listen, Kevin brings a lot of, but the money, it is a big number.
It's a huge
and the
number.
League has changed around him, like his, as the league has changed. But Kevin still, when he's healthy, has contributed to winning. He really is. And I don't mean to downgrade him because Kevin Love's a really good player. Yeah. It's just a matter of where does he fit? Like, you know, it's just a matter of what you would give up. No one's untradeable. It's just, could Cleveland get back enough that it makes sense to do? Better than keeping him.
I've had guys on other teams tell me they might have to attach an asset to get off of him, and I say that's not going to be the case. That's too much. Now
I don't think so.
Would you maybe have to take on something unpleasant to get an asset from another team? Would you maybe have to take on Bismack Biyombo to get Charlotte's lottery protected first round pick? Yeah, that may end up being the case. I think if he plays well and stays healthy, and already Part B of that has not happened, I think he will be movable at a neutral level. And I most people actually disagree with that. Most people err on the side of like that contract's gonna be really hard to move. And you do look at teams like, you know, we always dreamed of like who is who is Toronto's power forward going to be? Like, remember Paul Millsap to Toronto was like a borderline obsessive thing, and then they got Ibaka, and now Paul Millsap's in Denver, which is a team that, as you pointed out, has looked very hard at trading it for Kevin Love in the past.
Mm-hmm. But Denver now is set up. Trey Lyles is really setting up to be their power forward of the future.
The ship has sailed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not quite that high on Trey Lyles, but I like Trey Lyles, but that ship has sailed, and I just don't know who the team is going to be, because like I said, I don't, you know, Derek Favors missed last night's game with knee soreness, and it just doesn't appear that the Favors Gobert. I'm just endlessly just obsessed with the Favors Gobert thing in Utah. And by the way, so are the Jazz. And if you talk to their coaching staff over the last 4 years, the debate and the pendulum on like can we really win the championship playing Favors and Gobert 20 minutes a game has gone up and down and up like a sine curve or a cosine curve or whatever the curve in trigonometry, calculus, whatever the hell that math is, that waves around like that. And last year they started off horribly, surged toward the end because Favors got healthy, and there was hope that this will be the year that Favors can hit corner threes and sort of unclog the lane. He's 0-for-6 on threes. It just doesn't appear it's going to happen. And yet, I just don't see the Jazz. I mean, the Jazz, Favors' contract for next season is non-guaranteed. For whatever reason, the Jazz are hoarding this cap space. They're hoarding this flexibility. And I just don't see them sacrificing it to take on $30 million of Kevin Love, even maybe for free. I just don't think they do it. So that brings us to the other topic I wanted to talk about, which is the 1-5 Washington Wizards, who took a collective dump on the court again last night against the Clippers. I obviously don't mean that literally, but I watched half of that game last night and the other half this morning, and it was pathetic.
Yeah.
And their team is playing pathetically. And yeah, so here we are. Here we are with the Wizards again. It took 5 games.
And here comes Dwight.
And here comes Dwight, baby. Dumb me the ball in the post. I know it. Okay, I traveled last time. Give it to me again. Okay, I almost broke the backboard this time with my jump hook. Give it to me again. This is going to be third time. It's going to be the charm. I dunked this time, so now you got to give it to me 3 more times and play out the whole cycle. It took 5 games for the Wizards to begin sniping at each other in public about they got their own agenda and this and that and like if I have one regret for the season, it's that in my predictions column, I chickened out on a Washington misses the playoffs prediction. Because I don't know why. It's like, what if I'm wrong? Who cares? Just go bold. Because I just don't like this team. And even if you look at the entry about them, they're in the solid playoff teams tier, and it's all about how I have no faith in them and they stink. I just...
You know, Washington's like Minnesota in this way, where you said, okay, we know the chemistry screwed up. We know these guys generally all don't like each other. But you know what? They've got through it in other seasons, and it's going to manifest itself at some moment in the playoffs. But there's just too much talent there, especially in the East, for it to just bottom out. And you said, yeah, if you just keep that Minnesota group together, like no one liked each other last year. And come on, they were the 3 seed in the West until Jimmy Butler got hurt. And none of those guys felt any differently about each other than they do now. And same in Washington. And then all of a sudden, like the season starts and you go, okay, you can't go on. Like, this can't go on anymore. Well, like, they hit a breaking point.
Their next game is at Memphis. I believe it's the last game of this road trip. They need to have a come to Jesus moment now. Like, this is ugly and it's terrible. And if they lose this game at Memphis, I mean, I don't know what you've heard. Have you heard anything about Scotty? The buzz is he's actually safe, yeah. Partly because he has so much money left on his contract.
Yeah, it was a 5-year, $35 million deal, seven a year. And by the way, that benchmark, Scott Brooks's $7 million a year, that became a benchmark for a lot of guys to like, that became a starting point in a lot of negotiations.
You want to be the starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's generally means.
What's that thing about a neighborhood? You want to be the worst house in a good neighborhood or the best? I never got that.
I don't know. I've never owned a house. Oh. I don't know.
I don't know. Something I never listen. Some real estate advice I never probably listened to. But anyway, no, I don't think you never say never, but in most part, Ted Leonsis has had tremendous patience with people in Washington. He's been very loyal. You know, listen, no one can just keep taking on water like that. You can't, no matter who the coach is and or management, you just can't keep getting blasted every night. You have to stabilize it. So assuming they stabilize it, like if this just keeps happening, yeah, like it might feel different in 10 days or 2 weeks or a month, but you have to assume this it can't keep going like this, but so far it has.
They are towards the bottom of the league in both offense and defense. They're switching more this season, except they're terrible at it because they don't talk to each other, and part of their switching is just laziness. And it just they just project as a very unhappy team. Like in the preseason, their shot selection was like what Milwaukee and Toronto and the Rockets are doing now, which is just like a lot of the best shots. And now it's not bad, but it's also not good. And I thought last night against the Clippers, they took a lot of hoggy shots. Like right at the beginning of the game, Otto Porter took a terrible baseline fadeaway out of nothing. Early in the shot clock too, that was like, what is he do? Like, why is he taking that shot? And then you remember all these guys were talking about who's getting shots and who wants shots. And like if you watch John Wall when he doesn't have the ball, there was a possession last night with like, I think 4.5 minutes left in the third quarter where the set called for him to give the ball to Porter at the top of the arc and go to the corner. And boy, he went to the corner more slowly than I did when my parents asked me to take out the garbage. Well, I mean, he went there, and then there was this, and then he puts his hands on his knees because that's what he does when he doesn't get the ball. And Jan Mahinmi, who's making $16 million a year for some reason, was late going up to set a screen for Otto, so the timing of the play was screwed up. And John Wall in the corner just throws his hands in the air, rolls his eyes and looks at the bench. And it's just like when you see and that was like there were multiple things by other players like that in the game. When you see stuff like that, it's like this is a miserable, miserable team that needs to get some W's
and
now.
Not even the Halloween. When you're seeing that, it's not even Halloween yet.
So right. if Scott Brooks is safe and you've heard that and I've heard that, like what can happen?
Like safe until like Ty Lue is safe Saturday.
What can happen then? Because look, they're trapped. They cannot. They have three guys who are going to make between them almost $100 million starting next year in Beal, Wall, and Porter. I don't know what they can do.
Here's a question for you. Who would you get more back for? Which guard?
Oh, Beal. It's not even close.
Right?
Beal is a star. Beal is a...
Would that have been true last year, the year before?
As soon as John Wall signed the Supermax, okay. That became true.
Yeah.
I wrote this in one of my preview columns. If the teams should be sniffing around Brad Beal now, they should be talking illegally to his agent. They should be talking to the Wizards because if this thing breaks apart, John Wall's trade value is at an all-time low because the Supermax kicks in next year and the numbers are, I mean, almost literally eye-popping. There are questions about his knees and his conditioning. They're pretty well known. Otto's fine. Otto Porter's fine. He's a little bit overpaid. It's fine. He's a good player. A lot of teams would be happy to have him. Beal is really, really good and on a contract that is really fair at a position of high, high value in the NBA.
You know, if Porter had maximized – if Porter just became the best he could be and like not everybody probably would want to pay him that, but he – just taped a podcast with Sean Marks earlier and today in Brooklyn, and we were talking about the offer sheets, right?
That offer sheet should go in the Hall of Fame somewhere. Like the actual legal document of the offer sheet with all its little tricks and poison pills, it should be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. And then, but if they could just develop, if there was one guy, like if Kelly Oubre had really developed after Otto, and you would have thought that Otto and one other pretty good young player could have brought them back a third star. Right, whether it be hypothetically a Jimmy Butler or whoever the really really
they should
the
be trying to get Jimmy Butler.
I actually thought they would. Yeah, I know. I did too. And you never know. But I don't know if that's you would have thought like your third guy and then a pretty good like a developing fourth guy gets you like a star. And I don't know like with Kawhi, I think that was sort of like the formula they hoped could get them Kawhi, and it really couldn't even get them in the conversation with the Spurs. And so that you know if that happens and you get a third guy who could solidify maybe help solidify the two of them, although the guards I don't know if that's ever going to be the case, but that I think hasn't helped Washington's ability to sort of impact his roster.
They are a really interesting study of team building because they can't pay Oubre. Oubre didn't get an extension because they can't pay him. They just have too much money on the books. if you look at all their transactions from the moment they picked John Wall at number one, because you look at them now and you're like, oh my God, they're just trapped into this team that isn't good. This team's not good enough and they're trapped. They can't do anything. How did they get here? Where are the support players? And it's kind of like death by a thousand cuts. Like nothing is like, there are a couple things that are abysmally terrible. Like Jan Mahinmi's contract is abysmally terrible, and they had Gortat on the books when they signed that contract. That was the summer of 2016 free agency consolation prize orgy of bad contracts. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the things they've done. So they miss a couple picks, right? Like they miss on Vesely. That hurts.
There's a great moment in St. Bonaventure history coming here, isn't there?
I don't know. I hope so.
Keep reading. It's coming.
It may not.
Keep going.
They miss on Vesely, which is okay. The only pick I'm going to kill them for, because the other picks they miss on are your 15, 16 middle, mm-hmm. Chris mm-hmm. Singletons and mm-hmm. Kevin Serafins and all this. They trade what ends up being the 18th pick for Marcin Gortat. Okay. I think that pick could have been Gary Harris or mm-hmm. or Jokic. It also could have been a whole host of bad players. Like, I don't think that game is fair to play. Mm-hmm. They end up trading what ends up being the 13th pick for Markieff Morris, which could be LeVert or I think Pascal Siakam to Jonte Murray or yeah. Denzel Valentine, Wancho, Wade Baldwin, any number of picks that don't work.
Siakam. I love that guy.
I'm driving the train. They end up trading the 22nd pick for Bojan Bogdanovic's expiring deal to Brooklyn. They also dumped Andrew Nicholson, who was part of that deal. There it is.
Right.
We're there. We've arrived at it.
What? How did they acquire Andrew Nicholson?
By signing him to lots and lots of money.
Yeah, 4 years,
the summer of
24, 25.
Where is he?
He's in China. I just texted him the other day. He's averaging 33-11 in China after four games. It's out of my. He's on my Instagram.
I will never forget, for like two consecutive years, Orlando got the third game nobody watches on opening night of the season.
Like 19 points in the first half against Indiana.
He went crazy. I think it started an hour before all the other games started. So they just had he had the world to himself.
He did. And
he went crazy.
I remember Tom Crean from Indiana was up at that game and he was texting me. He's like, your guy Nicholson is unbelievable. He's really good. You've been telling him he's good.
So all these deals, like Markieff Morris on his contract has been fine. And those picks are what they are. Bogdanovic, I think they knew was going to leave, and that one hurts because that's in a range 22 in that draft. Jared Allen's good, but that's in the OG Anunoby, Derek White, Josh Hart, Kuzma range. That hurts. They spin Gortat into Austin Rivers, fine. Like, just no harm, no foul. Remember way back when they traded Rashard Lewis's non-guaranteed contract, which was allegedly one of the great trade chips in the league, for Ariza? And Emeka Okafor. Everybody laughed at them. Mm-hmm. Turned out all right. Mm-hmm. Like, they spin Okafor into Gortat by trading him to Phoenix along with that pick. And Ariza was great for them, and then they let Ariza go. Why? Because they were obsessed with hoarding room for Kevin Durant, and they did not end up getting a meeting with Kevin Durant. And my only point is that, like, all of these moves taken together, or all these moves individually are like, yeah, well, no harm, no foul, no harm. But, like, there's just some sort of cumulative opportunity cost of all the picks out the door and all the cap space used up in ways that is suboptimal. It's just they're not all bet. They're not, like, objectionable moves.
Yeah.
But, like, the sort of cumulative opportunity cost, it's the only nerdy way it can come. It's just – and now you arrive at this spot where – and then you throw in a one contract like Mahinmi. That's one. And maybe that's all it takes once you've thrown all these picks out the window is one bad one.
Washington has – some of those mistakes have come sort of when free agency is emptied out and this is who's left. So, you know, like all of a sudden let's see. Detroit signs John Luehr. They don't get Luehr, and then they pay Nicholson. Mahinmi, they sign him, you know, coming into, I don't know, that free agency. Another one, remember this one. They came pretty close to signing Luol Deng to a big contract.
They offered him three for 50-something?
3 for 50, and that's when the Lakers went to 4 years. And so think of that. They you know, he would have been off last year, but Luol, like sometimes, but they didn't. Now that being said, hey, listen, there's a lot of teams, who, you know, are perpetually in the lottery, who have not, and then if they get into playoffs, didn't get out of the first round. This is a team who a year ago was in the conference semis, right? They were in the conference semis.
Yeah, they almost
right.
Yeah.
And so, like, while like we can go through and do it, but like I also, you know, you also have to like in this league. I think sometimes, remember one GM said to me a few years ago about like, you know, the league has become my process is better than your process. Results don't matter anymore. And, you know, we're all guilty of it. I'm guilty, probably the most guilty. Like you're talking about flexibility and space and this and that. But you know what? Washington's been in the playoffs and they've advanced in the playoffs. And, listen, they may write it and the group may, like they may yet get back in there this year. So you're right. Like, over time you can go through. We probably could do that with a lot of teams, more than not. They have, you know, generally been in the playoffs here the last several years, and there's something to be said for that because a lot of teams in the league are, you know, have not been in as much as they have.
And even in the summer of 2016, a lot of teams signed those. You mentioned the Lakers signed two of them. Like, there's just a lot of bad contracts from that summer. They're not alone. Mm-hmm. And Otto Porter, you know, that's an okay contract. I think it's an acceptable contract. And part of that was just bad luck. Like, they took that to restricted free agency and they ran into a GM in Sean Marks who was going to make sure they paid through the nose. And in the end, they would have been better off just extending him at the max or whatever than what they have now, which is the 3+1 contract with the trade kicker and all these awful things that makes it harder to trade. I mean, it's like, you know, some of that is just bad luck.
Restricted free agency, like, it's so funny. To me, it's like the unexplored sort of territory of – it's so interesting to me. It's like the place nobody ever wants to be. Teams don't want to be in it. Players don't want to be in it. Agents don't want to be in it. It brings out the worst in everybody. It brings out – people just are so angry with each other, and it takes years to get – sometimes it takes so much time to get over it. Like, I was asking Sean Marks about that, about like when you give out those big offer sheets, right? Like, you know, like those other GMs are pissed. And there's people in the league like – there's just – it creates animosity. And then like when it's your own guy and, you know, like you're trying to – you know, this guy can't get an offer sheet anywhere. You know he can't. And you're not going to bid against yourself. And then it's like, well, why don't you just give me this and we could get it done? Well, because no one else is giving you that. So I'm going to get you for less. And how hard do you want to grind a guy? And I mean, think – we go through a lot of cases. But, you know, Gordon Hayward in – and I remember covering that restricted free agency pretty closely. And
that's the summer of LeBron going back to Cleveland.
Right, that one. But the year before when it was his rookie extension, you mentioned Derek Favors. And sort of Favors' number was around, I don't know, Favors maybe got like a $48 million deal. And I think Gordon was trying to get to like 52 or 53. And negotiations were around 46 to 48. And it usually, like when you're that close, in my experience, it gets bridged and a deal gets done. But that one didn't get done. And then the next summer, yeah, he goes to Cleveland, but they were waiting on LeBron. And like Utah was always going to match. I remember Kyrie and Gordon talking about this at their press conference. Like, well, we were almost teammates in Cleveland.
Yeah.
No, he almost signed an offer sheet. And,
right.
Like you would never would have been teammates. Utah wasn't letting him leave. And then Charlotte does the offer sheet and it's matched, of course, in Utah. And then they sign Lance Stephenson. But anyway, restricted free agency to me. And this summer will be interesting because we didn't have many rookie extensions, and we could have a slew of guys in restricted. And it's always it's just a nasty endeavor. Yeah,
it's ugly. So I mean, I'll be interested to see how Washington plays. If you look at some of their stats, I think they were third in assist rate last year, and they're 28th or 29th now. That's an indication that the ball is not moving. They're down 30 passes per game now. The whole league is down in passes per game because of the increase in pace. A lot of these possessions are one kick ahead and that's it, but that's something to watch. And the one thing I'll give Dwight credit for, he's a good rebounder, and the Wizards are dead last in defensive rebounding, mm-hmm. with a defensive rebounding rate that would be like the worst one in the league in 7 or 8 years, like going back to a time when teams actually tried to get offensive rebounds, which they don't generally now. That's how bad they've been. Rebounding. So we'll see. We'll see how they play. They should be on raw talent, even if you think the Beal Wall Porter core is overrated, which I think it's being exposed as. It's the East. On raw talent, you cannot miss the playoffs with those two guards on your team. It just shouldn't be possible.
Isn't it funny? Every year we always think, listen, the East is definitely better this year. It's better. And then you get into it and you go, oh, man, it's not that hard to make the playoffs here.
No, that's the thing. And it's better at the top. Like yeah, the Toronto, the Boston, and Milwaukee and Philly are all really good. Yeah. After that, and Pacers are solid. After that, it's not so fun. What is the latest, if anything, on Jimmy Butler? Last week you reported that the Rockets are prepared to offer 4 first-round picks. We both followed up by realizing, I think, that on October 31st, Halloween, mm-hmm. One of my favorite days of the year, is the 2-month anniversary of the acquisition of Marquise Chris and Brandon Knight, and that could be a key deadline in terms of those guys become tradable, that you can add up their salaries with other people's salaries at that 2-month deadline. Is there anything cooking? Are we ever going to see the end of this saga? I thought when that Halloween thing clicked, I was like, finally. I just want it to be over.
Two things clicked for you. One was, oh, wow, that. And then you're like, oh, man, like, I got to go trick-or-treating. And now I've got this stuff hanging over. Is that day's a deadline? Like,
trick-or-treating is non-negotiable.
I know it is. So
if LeBron gets traded on Halloween, I'm still trick-or-treating.
But it's on your mind. Now I know I've got to do that, or I'm going to do that. I want to do it. But all of a sudden, it helps that my kids are older. There's no trick-or-treating. I think with Minnesota, it's, you know, some teams believe that Minnesota is really sincere in trying to get a deal done. Some feel like it's a little bit of a shell game at times. I think that the worse it goes, like if they were playing well, if this was working, if the environment was good, that loss to Milwaukee last night was such, or the other night.
Friday. Yeah.
That environment and that Malika Andrews, who's covering the Bulls and Minnesota and Milwaukee for us now, you know, she really painted a really interesting scene in the locker room after that game. And, you know, Jimmy almost sort of in this, I think she referred to like a parallel universe. Like he was just gallivanting around in there, didn't necessarily feel as invested in that result that had just happened. And you knew this was the fear of how it could go. And I think the fact that they're not only are they not winning, they're not playing well at all. They're getting booed every night at home. No one's getting booed more than the coach. And so I think that more than anything is probably going to speed up a conclusion to this because, you know, ownership is only going to go. The case that Tom Thibodeau or Scott Layden can make to the owner that if we're just patient and we, you know, we're playing well, we're winning, we have plenty of time, when it's just going as badly as it is, I think that more than anything speeds up this trade process, and I don't think this is going to last until, like, I'd be shocked if he was there at Thanksgiving, and it just feels like it'll be sooner. And
interesting,
you've got other teams in here who, as it's not going well for others, and pressure mounts in other places to maybe do something, you start to see agendas sort of align where we need to do a deal and those guys are like, we can't go on like this much longer. I do think the way it's gone there is speeding up this more. That will impact the offers that they're willing to accept. That will impact the offers that are coming in. Like things need to start happening in the league and now all of a sudden that guy that another team wouldn't put in a deal, all right, we'll put him in or we'll lower the protection on that. I think that stuff starts to churn every day and it's kind of like a magnet and something gets closer.
So it's not just heat or bust. You could see other teams.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's others. Yeah, there's plenty of others. And, you know, in these, history will tell you somebody's going to come out of nowhere in this like they always do. And so while, you know, we've reported and talked about a lot of different teams, like someone could come out of nowhere and because usually somebody does.
Is that Houston offer still – does that just exist in perpetuity? Did it getting out there impact the Rockets' willingness to do it at all?
I don't believe so. I don't believe it impacted – there, I think like the 4 picks is sort of like the 4 picks is sort of a sliding scale of,
Who's in the deal?
It's 4 picks. If it's 2 players, you probably don't really want. all right, maybe it's three picks. You know, maybe it becomes three or two picks based on who else would potentially be in the deal. But it's sort of a sliding scale a little bit. I think that but yeah, Houston is I don't think their doggedness in trying to get at Jimmy Butler has changed at all. I think they feel like they want to find a way to get him.
It will be – yeah, I mean, I assume that offer is still real. I haven't heard otherwise, and I agree with you. I think it's like, okay, if you want Eric Gordon, then it goes down to three. If you're willing to take these guys we don't want, then maybe it's four. And that would be – boy, if they traded four, I would be so curious to see what the exact protections would be on the last two. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're all in. And I said this last week. Like, I Daryl Morey has earned the benefit of the doubt that – he, if there's one front office in the league that knows to the decimal point the value of every draft pick and or can project the value of every draft pick versus the value of Jimmy Butler this year and 3 or 4 years down the road, it's Houston. They know it's a risk. They've calculated that it's a risk that they should take. And you know, they know what happened to the Nets as well as anybody else, and they will not let that happen to them, or they will hope that that doesn't happen to them.
Yeah, and the difference with the Nets deal too a little bit was – well, one, like, they were trading for two players in their mid-30s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Late-30s. And there was no – I mean, I don't know. I guess did somebody pick them for the finals? Maybe. I don't know. Like, I don't know if anybody realistically thought, okay, now this – we're better than Miami and we can – but also, Jimmy Butler's 29. And remember with the Nets, too, they had the – like, it wasn't just that they gave up three first-round picks. They had the – swapping of picks, which made it feel like they lost another
which
pick.
Which the league has talked about banning and has not banned. I checked last week. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember writing about this. Did that ever happen? And did they have not changed the rules? You could still actually do that.
Yeah. So, right. That, and then they had – and they sort of had a Joe Johnson swap in there too in that mix with Atlanta.
Yep.
So they lost one with Atlanta. They lost one with Boston. So it felt like when you go from having a lottery pick to something like out in the 20s – that coupled with trading the picks made it feel like they didn't have any for 6 years. This would be different than that, although four is – I mean –
four is a lot.
It's a lot. And it's a lot any way you slice
unless
it.
Unless you protect them in such a way that they are just – you've made them not valuable. And Bobby Marks is on this right away. You know, because you can't trade picks into the future longer than 7 years away right. – they can't protect – you can't have these things like where the protection goes for 5 years. It's just – you have to – so the 2025 pick, they could do something like it's top 10 protected, and if we are one of the 10 worst teams in the draft order that year, then it immediately becomes two second-round picks. And if you're Minnesota, where that number is, top 10, top whatever, becomes the becomes the only factor in like is that a valuable pick or is it not. And Houston is not going to mess around with unprotected picks that out into the future. I don't care if James Harden's on your team. He's 29. I don't care if he and Butler on your team right now at age 29. An unprotected 2025 pick traded out the door, if you've also traded other picks before it, is a massive, massive risk. And it's just not going to happen. They're not going to trade an unprotected 2025 pick. I just hope it's over. I'm tired of it. And I watched that Milwaukee-Minnesota game on Friday. I mean, that was similar to everything I said about the Wizards. Just Milwaukee would just throw like an outlet pass and Minnesota's players would be like, either A, we're not really feeling this defensive transition, or B, like, who do we have? I can't remember. Oh, they scored. Like, it was so, so bad.
You know, I was – if there was ever a time in our country or our society to just not give a shit about 2025, this is probably it, to just feel like – what's it going to matter?
Yeah.
Right? It's probably a whole other podcast.
Well, and you're joking about it, but there are some like Pat Riley doesn't care about the 2021 pick that he owes Phoenix, and Tom Thibodeau wouldn't care about the 2024 because A, we're either going to retire in Pat Riley's case or be fired by the time that obligation comes due. That's the next guy's job.
And that's where it comes to owners. But like even Glenn Taylor, I mean, I don't know that Glenn Taylor's going to own the team then. Like Glenn Taylor has discussed and has a minority partner that there's some talk that there could be some transition at some point. I do think it does impact the value if you've traded, if you have picks. It just all impacts the value of what you can sell it for and some of those things. So I'm not saying he doesn't care, but it's not like he's, Fertitta in Houston probably is going to own the Rockets longer than Glenn Taylor is going to have.
Just bought him.
Right, just bought him. So That's a factor.
Yeah, I guess we will see. Hopefully we will see soon. Anyway, you've got to go. You actually have actual work to do, other than just yapping on my podcast at my request. You know, you have an actual job to do.
Fun.
It's always good to see you. It's always good to have you on. No one's more plugged in. So, where are we going to see you next? I know you're all over TV.
LA Countdown this week.
You're going on Countdown?
Yep. Wednesday, Friday, I think.
Oh, nice.
So I'm headed to LA tomorrow.
Who do they have? Are the Lakers home? Do they have some good games for you to see out there?
No, it's not a good week. Somebody's home one of the days. I probably should know.
It's always such a bummer when you go out there and there's like no games for 3 days. You're like, ugh.
Yeah. I think Stan's in studio Friday. That'll be fun.
Be good.
I think Stan's set to be, besides the rest of the crew, which is great. So it'll be fun.
Stan is very, very good on TV. I just wonder, all these coaches, like, they realize, I don't know. You've got to be a nut. I mean that affectionately. Like, these coaches, it's just the coaching and the competition is so deep in their bloodstream. Like, I just can't imagine going back if you get a TV job and you're really good at it, like, and all the money you can make just sort of, I'm not saying Stan, they don't, we're like, Stan will watch film, he'll do all the same kind of prep, but the travel, the grind, like the constantly worrying about losing today, losing tomorrow, I can't imagine you'd ever go back. But they go back. Most of them go back.
Can't imagine living without it. I've said this to Jeff before, I think I've said this to Stan, like, the Van Gundy that I most want on television has not been on television. That's Bill Van Gundy, their father, who I've known since he was a junior college coach in upstate New York. But Bill is – I want to say Bill is my favorite Van Gundy. I like all the Van Gundys. But Jeff and Stan would both tell you that I wish there was a night somewhere where we could have – I know they've done the Jeff and Stan in some – they've been together on some stuff maybe when they were on Le Batard's radio show. I don't know, somewhere. The two of them. But, man, we need to get Bill Van Gundy on the air.
Why is that not possible?
I'm sure it's possible.
But we can do that.
Yeah.
Le Batard, his dad is part of his show. And he's very funny.
He's the best.
Even the bits with the handshake, I could watch those all day on Twitter.
With Mina. Are those staged? I never – are those
I don't think they're staged.
For the Instagram?
Honestly.
For, like, social?
I think it – like, I've never been on that show.
No.
I think it gets in your head.
Yeah.
I think you go – it's – but I think it has the reverse effect where it's so far in your head that when the moment comes, you're not prepared for it.
Yeah. There was one last week where – was it – no, it was – was it Katie Nolan where Dan dove over the desk?
That was a couple weeks ago.
That was a good one.
I think it would just – I think what happens is you get so psyched up not to fall for it. Then you get on the show. You're like, all right, I'm not going to fall for it. You get in a rhythm, the show's going well, get comfortable, and then you forget. And you're just like, oh, this guy's a nice guy. Like, oh, and you fall for it.
Yeah.
That's what happened. For sure I would fall for it, like 100% chance.
You'd be a good guest for that show. You'd be a good foil on that show.
100%. Well, every time I go on Le Batard's radio show, which is like twice a year, he makes fun of me. That's the whole bit. He just makes fun of me.
Yeah, and you better be like – you have to have every defense mechanism all prepared. It's like you need to be like in a 3-point stance, really low, like because Dan's going to come at you with something, and you're going to be like, you know, come on, like, and so yeah, he's the best. He's the best.
All right, Woj, thanks for everything.
Thank you.
We always will look for your work, and
thank you,
and
Zach.
We'll see you soon.
A lot of fun. Thanks.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.